My friend Matt Monning is coming up next. Matt is a former Cincinnati undercover cop from, 30 years ago. And the discussion tonight is centered around the Oklahoma City bombing 30 years after. And what he knows or thinks he knows about what really happened, who was behind it, and how things led up to the bombing of the Murrah Federal Building, April 19th, 1995. It's all ahead on this special Saturday nightcap as we continue on the home of the Reds, 700 WLW. By luck of the draw, you got me, Gary Jeff Walker, on 700 WLW. It's another special Saturday night nightcap. And our first guest this evening is a guy that I've had on the air before. He's a collector here in town. He's a former Cincinnati undercover police officer. And tonight the focus is something that 30 years on, people just don't want to talk about anymore. It's the chapter's been written. Everything that we could possibly know about the bombing of the Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma City in 1995 has already been researched. It's been combed over, and maybe combed over is a pretty good word, if not completely covered up, about the true reason behind it and what was going on leading up to it, involving the FBI, the CIA, other clandestine intelligence agencies in this country, something called Operation PatCon. To get in the middle of this, we have Matt Monning, who, as I mentioned, he's a local collector, a former undercover Cincinnati cop, and he's been really, really involved in this story and the backstory behind it ever since 1993. Believe him or not, and if you're a member of the FBI, just realize that you have to have security clearance to get in our building while this is going on tonight. But he makes several allegations that aren't really conspiratorial in nature when you look at the evidence that's been presented in federal courts, especially by a man named Jesse Trinidou. There is a book coming out on the 22nd, which, let me do the math, in about a week and a half, called Blowback, that details a lot of what we're going to be talking about tonight. So without any further ado, Matt Monning, welcome to the show. How are you?
Pretty good.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, you told me you felt like you'd been hit by a baseball bat.
Yeah, but another hospital stay.
Yeah, but it's good to see you, man. Good to see you up and around and upright. So you've been talking to me about this for a while. And there are some Cincinnati roots to what happened in Oklahoma City. So let's start there. You found out about this or kind of, well, at the beginning of this story, let's go back to 1993, right? Is that, that what year you started following this?
Yeah. I became a policeman in 92 and kind of fell into this in November of 92 is when it all started.
All right. If anybody remembers, we're going back 33 years here, there were the Midwest City Bank robbers, which was a group of guys here locally that you say were FBI informants or snitches.
Yeah. They were actually paid informants for the FBI, the CIA, and the Secret Service.
All right. What were their names?
Sean Kenny, Pete Langan, and Richard Lee Guthrie.
All right. So they're paid FBI or CIA informants. And what were these guys doing?
They were allowed to rob banks, basically, at will.
They were allowed to rob banks.
Yeah. I mean, if you're being paid by the government, and I said as an informant, supposedly, and you're out robbing banks, and you're not being locked up for robbing these banks, and they have a way to get hold of you, I mean, it's pretty plain and simple what they're doing.
Well, what was the purpose behind robbing these banks? And the FBI allowing them to do it.
The way it's explained to me was these guys were robbing these banks, and the FBI was following the money. And if you go back in time, go back anywhere from 85 to 95, look at any Newsweek magazine, Time magazine, any of the weekly things that came out, every one of them, either on the cover or inside of it, had an article on these state militias, you know, and they were just the bane of the federal government. I said they couldn't figure out a way to shut these militias down.
A threat to America.
Yeah. You know, so, you know, so these things, these militias and everything were out there, and they were trying to figure out a way to shut them down. Apparently, the way it's explained to me was they were allowing, the FBI was allowing these banks to be robbed, and they were following the money. And apparently, they were going to follow the money and then do search warrants all across the nation and shut these things down. But before they did it, all this money and that they were, you know, collecting got funneled into Oklahoma City, and Oklahoma City got blown up, you know,
right in front of you. In 95,
before they could even do the search warrants or do anything, supposedly.
All right, so Timothy McVeigh was working for the FBI?
That's a big bone of contention. You know, there's rumors that McVeigh was in town, was responsible for a couple of the robberies, that he worked with Kenny, Langan, and Guthrie on a couple of robberies, but there's no way to prove it, you know, because, you know, there's no fingerprints, there's no, you know, eyewitness testimony, anything like that to say it.
And, of course, Timothy McVeigh is not around anymore to talk about it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, McVeigh killed himself, basically. I mean, you get a guy that does this and you know, doesn't want to save himself. He wants to be executed as soon as possible. I said that was a gift wrap for the FBI.
Yeah.
You know, they couldn't do it soon enough.
Well, the other person arrested in connection with the Oklahoma City bombing, who is serving a life sentence in Supermax, tucked away from the rest of society, is a man named Terry Nichols.
Yep.
Why is Terry Nichols still alive and Timothy McVeigh is dead?
Well, Nichols doesn't want to die, for one. I said, and the other thing is, I said, he's in Supermax. I said, I mean, the guy can't do anything. It's 23 hours a day in lockup. They control everything about this guy. You know, most reporters and everything aren't allowed to talk to him or anything. Over the years, I believe that the last reporter that was able to ever talk to him was the lady that wrote this new book that's coming out, Blowback. It's Margaret. I can't remember her last name right off the top of my head.
But Blowback is the title of the book that's coming out on the 22nd.
Yeah. I believe she's the last reporter that was actually able to talk to him. But when the conversation went where Nichols said that the whole operation was due to a rogue FBI agent, they shut everything down. She wasn't allowed to talk to him no more, letters, nothing. You know, so
he's
basically been under lockdown probably for over the last year, you know, where no one's allowed to talk to him.
Matt, I recall vividly, and it was on all of the newscast in the immediate aftermath of the bombing of the Murrah building in Oklahoma City in 1995, that people on the scene and even some at the time law enforcement were saying that there was another man with Timothy McVeigh, a John Doe number two that we all heard about. And, you know, again, my memory's still pretty clear after 30 years on John Doe. I always heard they could never find John Doe number two.
Yeah. I mean, anybody knows anything about it, Oklahoma City, knows that there was a John Doe number two. I mean, there's over 20 eyewitnesses that came forward and gave sworn statements, you know, stating about it. There's videotape of a second guy getting out the passenger side of the truck that's miraculously disappeared, which is the main part of lawsuits here lately within the last 2 years, you know, of Jesse Trenadue trying to get this videotape, a copy of it, and the FBI just keeps stonewalling him, saying it never happened. In fact, the FBI's gone as far as to say there never was a John Doe number two. So, you know, which is it? I said, you know, you want to lie about it now? You want to lie about it later? I mean, they just can't keep their lies straight. And I said, the thing about Jesse Trenadue is when Oklahoma City happened and John Doe number two was first put out there, they locked up Jesse Trenadue's brother, Kenny Trenadue, is John Doe number two. They spent over a week interrogating him. They finally put zip ties around his neck, strung him up, beat the hell out of him.
And claimed that he hung himself.
Yeah, and killed him. And then said that he hung himself in his jail cell. The FBI's version is he tied a bed sheet around his neck, tried to climb up to hang himself on the sink, slipped and fell, bumped his head, then climbed up again and fell and hung himself. And I said, but when you look at the pictures inside the jail cell, there's puddles of blood all over the place, blood on the walls, there's blood everywhere. I said, this doesn't happen when you hang yourself. You know, so they end up killing him. Jesse Chenadu's brother is John Doe number two, and he's been suing him for over 30 years over this. And I said, he's gotten judgment after judgment against the FBI. So anybody that wants to say this is a conspiracy theory, this is just people, you know, constantly coming up with stuff, making things up. All you have to do is look at Jesse Trenadue's website. And I said, he recently put all 30 years of everything he's done, suing the government, radio shows, talk shows, TV shows, everything is online. It would take you 2 weeks to go through it. And all you have to do is just Google Jesse Trenadue, T-R-E-N-T-A-D-U-E. And he's got his own website, you know, KennyTrenadue.com. And it just follow the different sites that are, you know, bold and blue, and you'll get to the website that shows all 30 years of what he's done, you know, proving this stuff. And I said, they ended up killing him as John Doe number two, and that was the biggest mistake they ever did, was because the guy they killed is John Doe number two, his brother is an attorney. I said, he's basically devoted the last 30 years of his life. Jesse's 80 years old, and all the FBI is doing now is just waiting for him to die. They just want him to die and go away, but it doesn't matter. It's never going to go away. I said, he put all the stuff on the website, and you can look at this stuff to see what actually happened and the judgments that he's actually gotten against the government.
I definitely want to check that out. But, you know, strangely enough, today's FBI and Department of Justice just this past week came out once again and reiterated that Jeffrey Epstein did, in fact, kill himself. They, you know, showed evidence that they could show, because, of course, there were problems with the video surveillance system at the precise moment when this is supposedly have to occurred. And they're also saying that there's no Epstein files. And, of course, Jeffrey Epstein, the whole reason that he kept track of who was on the Lolita Express and on Epstein Island was as leverage and possible blackmail material, or we know, who knows what the money, who knows what his motivations were. Yeah. But it, in my opinion, because Donald Trump won the election last November and a new administration was coming in vowing to get to the bottom of all these things, if there was any evidence left, I believe the FBI, CIA, whomever, scrubbed and got rid of all this evidence so it was nowhere to be found. And as we all heard, there were thousands of pages of documents held in New York City that were part of the Epstein files, supposedly, and apparently nothing was there.
Yeah.
Miraculously.
Yeah, miraculously. I said, guys like Epstein, I said, that is their main MO, is to hold evidence like this. I said, video evidence, written evidence, everything.
You keep a black book, man.
Exactly, and that's all they've talked about for years, is this black book that they have. I said, even Ghislaine Maxwell, you know, talked about it. It's well known, and now all of a sudden, when it's time for it to come out, supposedly, now all of a sudden it disappeared and it never existed. I mean, it's a classic thing right out of the FBI's playbook. And I said, and I've told people for years, I said, Epstein wasn't the first guy that supposedly hung himself in his jail cell. I said, in this case with the Midwest Bank bandits, it's the same thing. I said, once Richard Lee Guthrie got locked up and he was over in Covington, he just they came to him and said, because Pete Langan ratted him out and said, told him that he was involved in the Oklahoma City bombing. The FBI went to him and told Guthrie, you're going to get the needle, you know, for this. So we don't care what kind of deal was made with you. You're going to get the needle for what happened in Oklahoma City. All of a sudden, he says, okay, well, screw you. He contacted a reporter in L.A. and started talking to him, telling him everything that he's done for the FBI, the Secret Service, and the CIA over the last 10, 15 years. All of a sudden, the next day, he ends up hanging himself in his jail cell, supposedly. So like I said, this isn't something new. I said, this is something the FBI's done for years. I said, when they want somebody gone, they miraculously hang themselves in their jail cell. When they did this to Trenadue, there were four or five other people that witnessed what happened, said that these FBI agents came in and did it. all those people have miraculously disappeared. They're either, you know, written off and put into a dungeon someplace, either up in Supermax, or they're dead. You know, so this isn't anything new. I mean, it's something the feds do all the time.
How long was it before Lee Harvey Oswald was dead after the assassination of President Kennedy?
Yeah, exactly.
For example.
You know?
And many people still believe that that was the hand of either the FBI, the CIA, or any number of organizations that operate in the shadows, with the FBI or CIA's tacit approval, if not participation.
Yeah, it goes to everything. I said you can even take it to, you know, to both, not even just Oswald. I said go to his brother, you know, Bobby. I said in 68, 69, when Sirhan supposedly killed him. I said, you can call it conspiracy theory, call it whatever you want. I said, the simple thing is, it comes down to plain facts. The simple fact of the matter is, there were more gunshots fired from two different directions, front and back. I said that Sirhan could have only fired from one direction, from the front. What about the shots that came from the back and they were behind his ear? And he only had an eight shot gun, and there was over 10 or 12 shots that were fired.
It must be another magic bullet or a magic gun.
Exactly. So, you know, you call it conspiracy theory. I just call it simple facts. I said, the facts don't mean anything. I said, if you're a cop, any kind of investigator, that's what you go by. You know,
right.
You can listen to people. I said, yeah, what comes out of people's mouths, everything's different. You can have two eyewitnesses watch the exact same thing, and they'll see two different things. I mean, that's a known fact. You can't go by eyewitness testimony or anything. But you can't dispute the facts. The numbers are there. More bullets were fired. It's on tape. And it's also in the holes in the wall and the holes in the head. I said, you can't fire from two different directions. It's that simple.
Well, let's get back to Oklahoma City and Jesse Trenadue's fight to find the truth.
Yeah.
About what happened to his brother. And you say that the lawsuits that he has already been victorious in. Against the government, right?
Yeah, several. More than several.
So why isn't this known in the media? I mean, is there a gag order on those settlements or what?
No, I said the DOJ comes in and intimidates them. And I said, case in point is, I said, the last thing that you've seen on Oklahoma City was a special that was done on HBO last year. Something about the road to Oklahoma City and all that. I said that. The people behind that was Bob Sands and Katie Couric. I said, they contacted me in 2022, and Bob Sands wanted me to, you know, be interviewed for this thing, and he told me what they were doing. He said that they actually came to the conclusion that what I told Trenadue back in 95, my version of the story about the Midwest bank bandits and all these other people that were involved in Oklahoma City was true, and that they were going to do a special about it to put it on HBO. And I told him, I said, you're spinning your wheels. It's never going to happen. I said, you're going to be able to film it. You'll be able to talk about it. I said, it's never going to air, ever. And I said, if you don't believe me, just do it. So he did it. And sure enough, when it aired in April of 24, I looked at it. Not one thing that I mentioned, not one thing he promised me was going to be in this documentary was in there. There's only about 17 seconds mention of the Midwest bank bandits in that theory. And I said, and then it glossed over and went to something else. So I called Bob and I asked him about it. And he told me, he said, we filmed it. He said, we had over 4.5 hours worth of film. He said, then when HBO got hold of it, he said, every bit of it ended up on the cutting room floor.
Wow. You know? I tell you what, it's a good place to stop. We'll be right back with more of Matt Monning talking about Oklahoma City 30 years on. And what we think we know and what we most people have no idea of on this special Saturday nightcap on 700 WLW. The views expressed in the following interview are not necessarily those of this host, the staff management of 700 WLW, or its parent company, iHeartMedia. We continue. We are back on this special Saturday night nightcap. Gary Jeff Walker, and our guest again in this half hour is Matt Monning, a former undercover Cincinnati police officer. He's a local collector, and he has had an acute interest in the Oklahoma City bombing and what led up to that in April of 1995. And gosh, if you miss any of these, make sure you check the podcast, unless the FBI scrubs it. after we're done. So, Matt, welcome back. This is not just opinion, as you say. These are not just allegations. This is just not some crazy conspiracy theory, because you have had personal communication with people who are in the FBI, with people who are behind the scenes about this Operation PatCon, the Midwest City Bandits back in the early 90s. And it was, as you say, an FBI operation to let these informants rob banks and then follow the money that they absconded with as they were trying to shut down militias around the country. And they're funneling this cash and tracking it, so to speak. And it all led to the Murrah Building, the Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma City, that April 19th of 1995, when Timothy McVeigh and others unknown worked to blow up that federal building, kill all those people, and create a national panic, really, that we were on the verge of widespread domestic terrorism in this country, and that the militias had to be shut down to stop that. So the local connection is a man named Ed Woods, you said?
He was the FBI agent that I dealt with at the time.
All right.
So me being a rookie cop, you know, only being on for a year and a half, 2 years, you know, I wasn't supposed to run into something like this. So the problem that I had was I didn't know any of this stuff at the time, but I said I was going after Langan and Guthrie. And the reason was because we had locked Langan up in November of 92. This is the summer of 93, and I got a girl over on Montana Avenue, Sean Kenny's, you know, girlfriend and her wife that he keeps beating up, telling me that her husband, Sean, is hanging out with these two guys, Langan and Guthrie. And so I went and did what they call a six pack and had, you know, two different ID things done. And I had her pick them out of a lineup, and it took her 2 seconds to point them both out. So these are the two guys that are training my husband on how to rob banks and fake IDs and do all this other stuff. And I said, well, it's impossible, because I said, we locked Langan up, you know, back in 92. I said, you know, he's done. I mean, he isn't getting back out. Well, I find out here that Langan was let out of prison. He was, you know, all this stuff just disappeared, and he was let out. Apparently, the FBI took him out of prison so that he could help them get this Richard Lee Guthrie. Apparently, threats were made against President Bush, and they were trying to get these two guys to lock him up. Well, as soon as
this is George H.W. Bush.
Yeah, George H.W. Bush, you know. So they were trying to get him to do this. So when they got him out, he just said, to hell with you, and he went on the run again. And started robbing, you know, banks and, you know, Pizza Huts and everything down in Georgia. So I had a flyer from that summer in 93 saying that Langan's wanted for this robbery of a pizza place down in Georgia. And the FBI's telling me I'm crazy. You know, I said, well, where is he? I said, he's not in prison anymore. So obviously somebody let him out. I said, he didn't crawl out the window. And I didn't see anything on the news, you know, saying the guy escaped. You know, so this is the way they do business. They just lie to you. And I said, you know, I was a rookie cop at that time, you know, 20-something years old, you know. So, of course, you know, you're trying to do your job. And, you know, when you're 20, it's just different. You got a different kind of energy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I didn't like being lied to, especially from the feds and especially from someone, you know, you're supposed to be on the same team. So that's what kept me going on it. That's what became a thorn in their side. And that's why me and Ed Woods just didn't get along, because he's lying to me and I'm proving him wrong at every lie. So, you know, finally my captain and everybody were able to, you know, confirm, yeah, this is what happened. They got him out, blah, 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 for this reason, you know. And okay, so I was ordered to let it go, you know. Well, I didn't let it go. I said, you know, I still kept putting evidence together on what these guys were doing. Now, the money on these bank robberies, you know, started showing up down in Miami town, you know, where Sean Kenny lived. So all the red stained bills that he was supposed to get rid of off some of these robberies, he was using for gas to buy pizza, you know, and everything else down in Miami town. You know, so I went down and got a whole bunch of those, you know, gave my $20 for their $20, you know, put sure. it in evidence, you know, and tried to do it that way. But like I said, the whole time, you know, I was called over to the FBI offices to talk to Eddie Woods at least three or four different times. Apparently that never happened. Because when the reporters and that looked into it and went and got the FBI logs and everything, the sign-in sheets and everything else, all of a sudden, you know, I'm nowhere to be found in these sign-in sheets, you know? So,
well, did you hallucinate this,
yeah,
Matt?
Yeah, apparently I dreamt it.
Did you make it up?
Yeah, apparently I dreamt it. So,
okay. You know, but you met with him personally.
Yes, I met with him personally. In fact, I met with him. I met with a whole bunch of them. I met Larry Haas. I met a whole bunch of the guys, CIA, Secret Service, everybody. And, in fact, what caused a big ruckus was when I took my files over there and I had it laying on the table when I had an address in Covington, you know, in Mainstrasse, you know, listed on the file. And one of the agents saw that file, and all of a sudden, it, you know, Eddie Woods grabs a file and all of them go storming out of the office and everything. Well, it turns out that address was a CIA safe house over in Covington.
Wow.
And they were furious that I had this address, you know, and they wanted to know why. You know, so, and like I said, so the cooperation, I mean, just kind of quit after that. You know, I mean, they're contacting my captain, you know, blah, blah, blah. And that's what my captain told me under no circumstance. He said, you need to leave this alone and just let it go. You know, so I kind of just put it on the back burner then. So what I found out was after that, they had hidden Sean Kenny in the U.S. military. So they had to find a way to pay Sean Kenny, you know, this nutbag that they have as a informant. And the way for them to pay him and take care of him, because he had a disabled kid, was to put him into the military. Now, this is a guy that has Nazi tattoos up and down all his arms, on his back, everywhere. They put him into a predominantly black unit down in South Carolina or North Carolina. And I said, and they pay to have all these tattoos removed, you know, during the course of this.
Right.
So he's in the military. He rises to the ranks of, you know, like E7, E8 within a matter of a couple of years, which is, it's
that,
like
doesn't, I said, that doesn't happen.
Exactly. It doesn't happen unless you have someone pushing this and doing it. You know, so he's rising up the ranks. And not only that, during the time he's in, I said, he gets accused of molesting his niece. And I said, so when you're in the military and you get accused of molesting a 12-year-old or 11-year-old, however old she was, I said, it doesn't end up well for you. You know, it's usually called dishonorable when, you know, you're shown the door. Well, no, this guy just keeps moving up the ranks and everything and then ends up retiring. But the reason they do it is because they have to pay him somehow. And the easiest way to pay him is put him into the military. That only, now he's got insurance for him and his family and everything else. And then they can pay him whatever they need to pay him while he's in the military. And then, you know, there's like,
and this is one of the Midwest City Bandits.
Yeah, this is one of the Midwest Bank Bandits. You know, and when all this went down, I said, you know, finally, after 3 or 4 years, you know, City Beat, Leslie Blade was a reporter. She was able to dig into all this, and she wrote some articles back then about it. And she's the one that wrote the article about, you know, Kenny and his rise through the ranks in the military, and, you know, the charges against his niece and everything else that went on, and how this was all just covered up. And when you go out to the unit out here in Roselawn that he was out of, the reserve unit and everything, and you went out and talked to them and tried to find anything about, they just totally shut their mouth about it. They won't even talk about Sean Kenny. Or, you know, how he rose up through the ranks and, you know, and all this. I mean, and it's just, and like I said, it goes back to what I told you. I said, numbers don't lie. The way he moved up to the rank that he's at, numerically doesn't work. In between ranks, you have 2-year waits, 3-year waits, right. 4-year waits.
Anybody in the military listening, you will probably attest.
Yeah, it just isn't possible, you know. So, and then after the military and that, well, then all of a sudden, you know, Eddie Woods, I guess, helped Sean Kenny get into, like, all these units like Blackwater, these contracting units all through the 2000s and the teens, you know, where, you know, you're going overseas and you're working for different things. Well, he worked in, like, Afghanistan and a few places like that. And apparently, you know, was involved in some stuff, you know, where the hotels got, you know, bombed and blown up and attacked. And now, basically, you know, he's here, back here in the tri-state, you know, suing everybody, trying to get disability pay and everything else, you know, for what happened to him while he was, you know, in these contracting units. You know, so
it's a remarkable story.
Yeah, he hasn't gone away. In fact, he still lives in my backyard.
And again, the reason that you say this is important, Matt Monning, is because he was part of that team of FBI, CIA, whatever, informants, paid informants, who were paid to rob banks. They got away with it. And then the FBI or whichever agency followed the money hoping to shut down these militias that led up to Timothy McVeigh. Who was Timothy McVeigh? Who was he?
Well, I mean, if you believe what they wrote, I mean, he was just your average, you know, American citizen. I mean, basically his life was almost like mine. I said, you know, back at that time in 92, the economy was terrible, you know, and you couldn't find a job doing anything. He didn't want to follow what his parents did, working in the car industries and everything and doing what he was doing. And he decided to join the military, you know, same as I did. I said, you know, my parents weren't rich. We didn't have a ton of money. I said, you know, I really didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. I said, so finally, after a year and a half at UC, you know, taking all the basic courses you need to take, I just decided to join the military to pay for everything, you know. And at that time, they had a good program called a C college program where you only had to go in for 2 years active duty and then 4 years in the reserves, you know. So I did my 2 years active duty in the Persian Gulf, you know, came home, you know, and everything was paid for, you know. So that's basically what McVeigh did, you know. He wasn't the C college program, but he went in the military as, you know, as a way to try to find himself, and, you know, in the process ended up losing himself, you know, and came out, got disgruntled, and then started running around with all these militias.
Right.
You know, and he was actually at Waco. You know, he was at Waco, you know, when that siege was going on, you know, passing out bumper stickers and everything else. You know, I mean, it's a well known fact. I mean, you look at any documentary on McVeigh, you know, and it delves into what happened. You know, so then he got involved in all these militias and everything. And the next thing you know, he's the prime guy for, you know, Oklahoma City.
You know, they because he asked for a speedy execution when he was convicted.
Yeah.
They did take care of him. Terry Nichols, as you mentioned earlier in last half hour, is in Supermax and is not allowed to talk to anybody. And the FBI now says at some points there's no John Doe number two in the Oklahoma City.
Oh, yeah. They insist that there was never a John Doe number two. You know, so it's like, you know, how do you go from there is a John Doe number two and you kill somebody over it? I said to there never was a John Doe number two. They also
Jesse Trenadue's brother.
Yeah.
Was John Doe number
two. He was John Doe number two. And that caused a 30-year chaos. It's been a thorn in the FBI's side for 30 years suing him every year over different things. And the problem is I told Jesse, I said, you win, Jesse, and you get a judgment. Okay. He's been fighting these FOIA requests, you know, requesting different things that he knows is there. You know, the government comes down, they side with Jesse and they say, you're right. And they order the government to produce, you know, $5,000 or $10,000 pages a month, you know, whatever it is, or it might've been a week. They said you have to produce 5,000 pages a week because there's like well over 200,000 or 300,000 pages that he's supposed to get. So they said you produce 5,000 pages a week. How many pages a week do you think the guy gets? Two.
That's not 5,000.
Yeah, exactly. So you know you waste five years of your time trying to get this done on a FOIA request. You get a judgment against them, and they're supposed to do something, and then the FBI just flaunts the judgment as usual. You know, they don't care. And I said, and they're doing it because the guy's 80 years old. They've been stringing him along for 30 years. Now the guy's 80-something years old, and they're just hoping and praying that he dies soon on his own.
He just wants the truth to come out.
Yeah, he just wants the truth to come out as far as what they did to his brother, you know? Oh. You know, I mean, it's a shame. And if you actually look up his websites and you see it, he put all the pictures online. You look for yourself and look at the condition of his body and the condition of this jail cell. And look at what happened. And I said, you know, it's just insane.
Can you once again, just for people's edification who are interested and want to go there, give me the website again to the best of your memory?
I believe it's www, and there's a couple of them. JesseTrenadue.com. It's JesseTrenadue.com.
All right.
Or KennyTrenadue.com. That's the big one, I think, is www.KennyTrenadue.com. If you go to that one, I believe that's the website where he has all 30 years of what he's done, you know, listed, where you can, you know, just click on it. You know, you want the interview he did in 1997 with somebody, he's got it on there. All this stuff is on there. You can go through it. But I said, the big thing is just go to the website and look at the pictures first. You know, scroll through till you find the pictures. Look at the pictures of his body and look at what the government says happened versus the pictures that you're looking at.
I'll be honest with you. The first time you kind of brought this to me, that's been several years ago. You came to visit me, and you were telling me about what was done to you and how it all related to Oklahoma City. I was just kind of eyeing it with skepticism because I didn't know all of this.
Yeah.
And I'm a lot more convinced now that there is so much truth out there that most people do not know.
Yeah. It wasn't just the Oklahoma City thing. I said, I mean, they came after me for a million different reasons. I was going after dirty cops. You know, when you're an undercover cop, you're not supposed to be investigating other cops. You ain't supposed to be going after other cops that are dealing dope and, you know, running girls and everything else.
Unless you're in internal affairs.
Yeah, exactly. Well, exactly. I said, you know, I mean, the whole system is corrupt from top to bottom.
Made a compelling case for me tonight. I don't know anybody who is listening if it worked for them, but check out the websites that Matt talked about. And thanks for coming in, man.
No problem.
Very, very interesting stuff. Yeah. And if all of it is true, then we really don't know who's running this country. And, you know, And can we really have faith in law enforcement, in especially federal law enforcement at that level, of what happened back in the 90s and the 2000s? Matt Mauning is our guest tonight, and I appreciate you checking it out and tuning in. There's more Nightcap ahead on 700 WLW. Hang on.